Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Kopisch here. Trustee Gendrich here. Trustee Green
here.
Trustee Van Oven here. Trustee Dart
here.
Trustee Gaff
here.
Trustee Zeller said he might be a few minutes late. Are there any recommended modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there? Yes, Tracy.
We can possibly move number 14 up maybe after the public hearings.
Okay. So 14 to 8B. Is there anyone here visiting who'd like to see an item moved on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as modified to move item 14 to 8B? Trustee Kopisch, second. Trustee Gendrich, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Are there any announcements this evening? Hearing none. Move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak? And with regard to the church, we'll wait until we get to that item on the agenda, and then we'll open it up for people to participate in the discussion. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
I'd like to speak on the topic that I had at that time.
At the time that it comes on the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
I'd like to speak in regards to the variance of the extension of the church.
Okay. So we'll open it up for public comment, both of those items when they come up on the agenda. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to another issue or about an issue not on the agenda? Okay, just so you know the process, the item will come up amongst the board, we'll have some discussion amongst the board, and then we'll open it up for our visitors. Item 5, public hearing to consider adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-13, amending section 11.03, definition of home occupation, creating section 11.04J, regulation of home occupation, etc. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Second time, is there anyone who'd like to speak?
Just for clarification,
yes.
Brought this issue before the board.
Who originally it came from Mr. Roberts. I don't know if there was someone else.
Yeah, I was just curious if, you know, there was some party that was not interested enough to show up for the hearing.
No, this was brought up. We had, over the last couple of years since I've been here, we've had various complaints come in about it. It finally said, well, I thought there was a lot of issues.
And there were complaints from residents adjacent to people who were kind of running businesses out of their homes and people who were running businesses out of their homes who thought they should be able to and who weren't allowed to. Is that correct?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And a third time, is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and proceed to item 6, action regarding the adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-13.
Go back 5 for a second. About the one section that you brought my attention on.
Right, we can bring that up amongst the board as an amendment to the. Okay?
All right.
Mark is referring to, he and I had a discussion before the meeting in item K, section, what would be 1K on the second page, the first item, service, repair, painting, or on-site selling of any motorized vehicle, including but not necessarily limited to motorized or non-motorized vehicles. That first motorized vehicle, the motorized and motorized vehicle should be stricken. So it should read service, repair, painting, or on-site selling of any vehicle, including but not necessarily limited to motorized or non-motorized vehicles, etc. Any other, I guess I'll take a motion to adopt the ordinance before we proceed to discussion. Trustee Green, second. Trustee Kopisch,
sure.
Discussion, I have that one amendment. Trustees Green and Kopisch, will you take that amendment as part of your motion and second?
Sure. Understood.
Or that friendly amendment, okay. Any further, yes, Trustee Darby.
Just one concern I have. But number 12, and maybe it's just the way I'm reading it, but arts, handicraft, music, writing, photography, or similar studios. My concern would be like art studios or writing studios. I can't see how they would be a problem. But if they're doing shows at their home, I suppose they would. I guess I'm looking at it, and maybe there's just some word we can put in there to change it, but I'm looking at more as an art studio in your home.
An art studio in your home that only you would use, you mean?
That you're doing your... I know of somebody in the community that will paint your portrait or things like that. You know, it's an art studio. You go there, you sit.
What if we put not receiving more than one customer per hour?
That would be perfect. I would be fine with that.
Number 12. Mm-hmm. Okay, Trustees Green and Kopisch, will you also take that as a friendly amendment to your motion and second?
That's fine, sure.
Any other discussion or recommendations for editing of the ordinance? Okay. The motion on the floor is to accept the ordinance as proposed with the deletion of the item in K1 and the addition of the verbiage in K12. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 7, a public hearing to consider adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-14, repealing and recreating section 11.24, enforcement violation and penalties. Is there anyone who would like to speak with regard to this issue this evening? Second time. Is there anyone who would like to speak? And a final call. Okay, we'll close the public hearing portion and proceed to item 8, action regarding the adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-14. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move it up.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart? Discussion?
This is basically a rewrite of existing with some fairly minor changes, would you say?
Okay. Just about the cover of use.
Right.
You know, as opposed to construction or reconstruction, just both, you know, improper usage is a punishable offense.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item 8B, old item 14, action regarding the site plan review for the steeple project at Ascension Lutheran Church, 2911 Libel Street. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Excuse me. Or would you like to entertain discussion first?
Discussion.
Would you like to proceed to discussion? Okay. Is there a discussion with regard to this item? I asked Tracy to sort of go over the process that the church went through in erecting the new building and then for the steeple project. So maybe we should hear that first.
Sure. The church began the process in 2011 to put the addition on their property. They went through the site plan review process, and they went to Plan Commission, and then they went to Village Board, and it was approved in October 2011 for their addition to their property. That addition did not include at that time a steeple of any type. It was really an expansion to their gathering room and some addition mainly on the west side of the building. Also some parking additions and some landscaping. So that was their original original site plan review, and that was completed, at least the process through the village was completed in October of 2011, and it was approved by the village board. Then probably about 6 months ago, maybe or so, the church decided they wanted to look at putting a steeple on the new addition to their facility. My understanding, talking to the church, is it was a fundraising thing, that they had separate fundraising for the original project and then maybe a secondary fundraising for the steeple part of the project. So they came forth with the request to put the steeple on the project. And their request was higher than our zoning code as far as the height of the steeple. So at that time, our building inspector did deny the steeple and said if you'd like to pursue it, they would have to go to the Board of Appeals. They did go to the Board of Appeals in
October
of 2013. They went to the Board of Appeals and were asking the Board of Appeals for a variance of 33.5 feet. So with a total height of the steeple of 65.8 feet, I believe it's total. And Board of Appeals did approve the variance for their height, for the additional height on that steeple at their meeting. Just to refresh everybody with Board of Appeals and how it works and what the process is, once the Board of Appeals goes through the process and grants a variance, the only way it can be changed or appealed is within 30 days of the original granting of the variance, and then it has to go to circuit court. So either the petitioner, if the church did not like the outcome of the Board of Appeals, they could have gone to circuit court. The village could have gone to circuit court, or if there is any resident or anybody in the area that wanted to appeal it, that would be that's how they would have to go ahead with appealing the Board of Appeals variance. Since that time, or part of the whole project for the steeple is, then again, the church is required to come through site plan review. They began the site plan review process with Plan Commission, and the site plan review is very similar to the same process they went through with the church, maybe a little less because it's not as big a project. It's just a steeple versus putting a whole new building and parking lot and landscaping project. So they went to Plan Commission, and Plan Commission did approve the site plan review when they came to their meeting, which was, again, just fairly recently. And that was approved, and the steeple was allowed. They had a few conditions that they put on it, which are listed in your book and your packet tonight, but otherwise it was approved. One thing is the village board needs to remember, and I reminded Plan Commission as well, you cannot make any changes to the height. The height of the structure was approved by the Board of Appeals, and the village board or the Plan Commission cannot just decide, well, we're going to say you can only go to 50 feet or 30 feet because the Board of Appeals has approved that. What's before you tonight is really the site plan review, so looking at the structure itself, the lighting of it, how it looks, where it is, any of those type of things is what you should weigh in on tonight. The height is not something that is open for any kind of change at this time, unless the church would decide that they wanted to go less with the steeple. But because of the variance being granted, we cannot amend that. The village board cannot at this time. So that's really the process. I'm having questions on it. It's kind of been maybe 2-3 phase process as it's gone through our processes here.
Tracy, your memo talks about the removal of the sound system, but there's plenty in the packet about speakers mm-hmm. and things like that. What's the status of that?
The sound system has been removed, and that's what I put in my memo. It came later from the church, and it was already in the packet, so I didn't bother pulling the information out. So, yes, please disregard any information in your packet in regard to the sound system. The church contacted me about a couple days before Plan Commission and said that they were going to be pulling that out of the SIBO.
So it's mainly...
Do you have a reason why?
You could probably ask the church, their representatives from the church, but my understanding is the council decided not to go ahead with it.
I can speak to that.
You know what? Why don't we hold off until...
No, I'll speak to that.
So we'll hold off and have some discussion amongst the board and then we'll open up for some interaction.
There is also one more clarification I'd like to make on the lighting of the steeple. In your memo, it talks about the lighting of the steeple and the parking lot lights. A clarification today, I sat down with Dan again just to clarify everything, but the steeple does fall under our sign code, and our sign code requires signs to be off between, or shut off at 10 p.m. and then until sunrise. And the steeple would fall under that criteria. It could be left on later if the church has any kind of an event. So if they would have a late mass, a midnight mass or something, they can leave the steeple on until the conclusion of that event, just like it's the same for any commercial business or anybody in our community. As far as the parking lot lights, they are not guided by our sign code. There is not a dusk to dawn or a 10 p.m. kickoff for the parking lot lights. They are not addressed in that code, so they can be on dusk to dawn and can be used as a security light. So my statement in regard to the parking lot lights is incorrect in there. Our code does not require the parking lot lights to be on off at 10 p.m. And the church has had them on, and they can maybe address that, but they're just for security reasons. They kept the lights on at night so that people can see into the parking lot, and if there's anybody in there, they can see a little better since it's dark in the back corner. So, but I think that's it, unless you have any questions on the process or anything else on the information presented.
Just a clarification, why would the steeple fall under the sign code since it's a perceived sign?
Yes, that's my understanding. Like a flag falls in there too, so the lighting of a flag and a steeple falls into the sign code.
Okay.
And, you know, the flag has to be on anyway, dusted on, so that's not a good example, I shouldn't say, but that's covered in the sign code as well.
Like a flag pole?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Hearing no further discussion right now, we'll open it up to our visitors.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Stuart Korsavin. I serve as the council president for Ascension Lutheran Church. I'm a resident of Alloway, residing in 3732 Lytle Street. The opening phrase of a beloved 19th century hymn begins, "Lift high the cross, the love of Christ proclaim." As Christians, we do this in our worship, in our religious education. We do this as we serve and minister to those in need. We do this in our architecture with a steeple. Some historians trace the church spire back as far as the 12th century. The steeples on American churches are said to draw their inspiration from those designed by the great English architect Christopher Wren of the 17th century. The more than 300-year association of the steeple with churches in America has made it part of a shared, widely understood architectural vocabulary. A steeple is a symbol of the divine. It lifts our eyes from everyday preoccupations and guides them towards heaven and that which is transcendent. A steeple is a reminder to the faithful. It marks a place of worship and calls believers to worship. A steeple is an invitation to the community. It defines a place of sanctuary where all can find care and compassion. The steeple for us is an expression of our religious identity and of our religious belief. It's far more than a sign. We ask you to affirm the decision of the Board of Appeals, to accept the recommendation of the Plan Commission, and to approve the addition of the steeple to our church building. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Dave Makinich. I'm the project manager for the building addition and also falls under this purview of the steeple. I put together the packets that are in front of you. I'm willing to go through those documents if you'd like. The basic idea here is adding a fiberglass steeple to the front dormer on the church. As she noted, the sound is not part of that, but there is lighting included to illuminate the steeple. One point I want to make on the memo she presented to you tonight, there is a base assumption, I did discuss this with her beforehand or this evening, that the church steeple is a sign. And I guess I've got to pull you back to the Religious Land Use Act of 2000, which does govern this. And there's several cases, one I can mention to you in this year, where the problem with the steeple right now is it has a cross. When you add the cross, it becomes a religious symbol. And in Florida, one case I can just enumerate right now, it was misclassified as a sign and got reversed. Because it's not a sign, it's a symbol. There's no lettering, no writing on it, other than conveying that it's a church. And unless there's other businesses that put up similar steeples with crosses to convey a message, I'm not sure where that lies. So it's purely unique to churches. Now, in your package, you can see the lighting detail information. I'm willing to answer questions you might have in that regard. The still light, the photometric study that was done, any questions you might have. I'm also a PE registered engineer in the state, so if you have any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
So I need to remind folks what Tracy told us. This is not about the height of the steeple, and we are not confirming or verifying the decision of the Board of Appeals. That decision has been made. That
right.
is not ours to make any longer. So when we vote tonight, we're voting, as far as I can tell, on the lighting and very little else, right? Because the sound is out. And
you know, the steeple design is another thing that you are looking at.
And I can touch on
the
that.
The what?
The steeple, the design of the steeple is the other thing that you can look at.
And I can touch on that, Steve, if you like. Our architect chose the steeple because of the height and dimensions of our building. There's a certain, what's called an aspect ratio, where you want to have a particular height that complements the architecture. He gave us a choice of five, and the group that I was in charge of selected this particular one, and he agreed with us that it would fit with the architecture of our church.
Okay.
That's the height.
All I want to make sure is that if this passes tonight in some way, shape, or form, that says nothing about whether this board agrees or disagrees with the height of the steeple. That's not our decision to make. That one's been made already.
I understand.
Trustee Genrich.
If we were to go with the sign ordinance and the light would have to be off at 10, what is your hope, wish, plan to have it lit 24/7 all night? Or?
Typically, just like your flagpole outside, the fixtures that come with this have photocells, and it's dusk to dawn. What I want to point out, and that's why we went to a lighting engineer specifically, because of where these lights are positioned and the type of fixture we have is a narrow point light. What that does, it focuses the light specifically on the steeple itself and minimizes what's called spill light. The wattage, lumen output, and everything is designed to minimize any light to the ground. And like she did an additional photometric study to make sure unless you're standing right in the face on the roof in front of the steeple, the lighting would be similar to what you see in this room at the face of the steeple. If you're on the ground, the lighting is similar to what you would see for egress lighting, which is 1 foot handle or less. If you're more than 50 feet away, it drops to less than 1 foot candle, which if you look at exit signs and different egress lighting, we're in that level. The room right now is at 30 plus foot candles, this room. So kind of get your mind around what we're talking about here. Everything on the face of the steeple is less than this room if you were right on top of the steeple on top of the roof. So I'm trying to understand, to help you to understand, we went to great lengths to make sure this lighting arrangement, design, going to a professional lighting engineer and doing the photometric study to alleviate any concerns that the neighbors might have, from still light or downlight. Our nearest neighbor to the south is roughly 180 some feet to the lot line. The other neighbors are 300 feet plus to their lot lines. That's not to their house, but to the lot lines that abut our properties. And to the north is roughly 300 feet. So at those levels, and Dan even agreed with me that you will not see the light unless you get in there, walk on your property to see that it is lit, but it's not at a level that would be any different than actually less than an exit type sign.
Aside from the light and being we're really talking about disruptive light, right?
Right.
That's what we're trying to avoid.
Well, still light that would affect people either walking, and when you're at 68 and a half feet and you're already above the 35 feet when you're on top of the roof, you would have, if you stood underneath the church, you may not even be able to see the steeple unless you backed off far enough to see that there is something up there.
With regard to the neighbors, though, they could, if they went out in their backyards, they could see the steeple. It just wouldn't be the kind of light that would be irritating someone at
that
distance.
Right, it's not glare light. It'd be illuminated, but it's at an extremely low level where they're standing as far as the output
right.
that they're seeing.
But they would be able to see it.
They would be able to see it. It's illuminated.
And it's that high. I'm still trying to get a perspective of how high it is and where
the church is. Let's see, just above 35 feet is at 42 feet. And then the steeple itself, the very top of the cross, is 68 and a half feet.
And you said that this is what the architect recommended in terms
right.
of proportions.
The steeple itself is 29 feet. If you look in your documents, there's a beacon photo or a rendering in there of the actual steeple from the designer that makes them. And it's 29 feet from it sits on the peak, and then it's that distance up to the top.
When you applied for the to erect the building and submitted the plans, and you had to deal with height requirements for the building, did you know that you were going to be building a steeple above and beyond that?
Yes. I referenced to the documents in your plans, the items 9 and 10.
Right.
It was part of the design process that I was involved with over 3 years. That one of the stipulations we had with the architect was the plan for a steeple.
Okay, and that's what I saw in the highlighted portion.
Pardon?
I saw that in the highlighted portion. Then, was it a surprise to you that you were going to have to apply for a variance to build any steeple at all, since you were pretty much at the maximum?
No, we were tipped off by that we knew it would probably exceed. I can't remember if the architect mentioned it to me on the initial thought process that we may have to. We knew we were funding it separately. It's not in the budget with the main building project, but we knew it would probably exceed the height variance or the height limitations for that area.
So that you knew you'd have to come back for a variance to
right.
erect the steeple.
It's purely a funding issue, too, why it wasn't in the original site plan. I can't put it on the drawings if we're not going to include it as a documented expense to the church. To put it in there. We could have ghosted it in, I guess in hindsight maybe that would have been better.
Yeah.
But the structural engineer was instructed, and also architecturally, that's why you get an architectural actual drawing from the original site plan and the structural drawing showing the limitations and what rules we had to follow in choosing the steeple.
Trustee Guest.
I mean, it seems to me that the lighting of the steeple, between 10 p.m. and the sunrise is a separate issue beyond what we're here to consider now. I mean, we're here to look at the plan commission recommendation with the deduction or deletion of the sound system. I mean, if they light it after 10 o'clock, you know, and it becomes a problem, then we have to look to the sign code, and then we also have to look to the Religious Land Use Act to see what trumps what.
Right. I'm,
but it may not ever become an issue, but I think it's a separate issue from what we're looking at right now. I mean, what we're talking about is a potential conceivable violation of the sign code, and if it's, and whether that's trumped by the Religious Land Use Act, which I've never read. So I'm just saying that it's something that we're not here called upon to tell them they can light it only up at 10 o'clock.
Voting on the technical aspects of the project.
They're free to light, I mean, we all know they're free to light it before 10 o'clock.
Right.
You know, so I just don't, and it may never become an issue, and I hope it doesn't become an issue. You know, that's something for a different day, maybe.
Right. Trustee Dart.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, those lights are on the on the roof, and they're pointing up at the steeple, right?
Right. If you look in your packet on item, I believe it's, let's see, seven, I'm sorry, the photometric. If you look on the first page of the photometrics, it gives you an idea of the angle. And you turn that, it's the foot candle at steeple, one of one. That drawing shows in real scale the lights are actually down from the peak, and that's why they're shining on the corners. Also, if you look at another document, it shows it's pointed at the corners. That way the light fixtures drop below the peak and are not visible.
So they're not going down, they're going up.
They're going up, but they're angled at 32 degrees. The roof is like this, then they're angled slightly up from the roof to hit the two-thirds point of the center mass of the
yeah, I just don't see a lot of light coming down.
No, really not. And really, I again point you to the actual photometric documentation is pretty thorough. You know, when you look at the third page of the photometrics, and when you look at that, I know it's very confusing, but the second and third drawings are meant to show light around the steeple, which would affect the neighbors. And when you look at the third one, it's 50 feet away, which you'd still be standing on the roof. And it drops below 1 foot candle in almost all directions, depending on how far away you are. If you stand on the ground, you're more than 50 feet away. And if you stand at the lot line, you're a football field away. So I can only emphasize this is as thorough an examination as we can make of what light is actually coming off. I know there's subjective views anyone can impart. But me as an engineer, I can tell you this is as critical of examination you can make, whether it be your flagpole out here or anything else. This is what they would do to recognize light interference with adjacent structures, people, or objects.
And I believe that. I believe that this light will not be disruptive, but people will be able to see the steeple from wherever they can see it during the day. They'll be able to see it.
That is correct.
Anything further? Did you want to answer the question with regard to the sound system?
You can ask me. If you think of something, just ask me.
Okay.
Actually, I do have one.
Okay. Trustee Green, do you want to?
The sound system. I know you're doing this piece in chunks. Are we expected to see the sound system come?
No, and Pastor Luther can address that. That was a ministry leadership decision to remove sound.
Okay.
I think maybe from
rationale
that would address your question.
I'll simply address that question. This I'm Pastor Luther Swenson, one of the pastors at Ascension, and the general feeling was you hit that word disruptive, and as leadership talked about this, we realized that it could be easily construed that sound would be disruptive in a way that a simple steeple alone would not be. And we thought, well, let's remove that from the equation. So there are other steeples and bell towers in Alloway, and they speak away, and we'll leave them to it. And for us, we're just interested in the symbol, the religious symbol of the steeple, and letting it speak that way.
Thank you. Any further questions about the sound? Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
Good evening. My name is Paul Bachheber. I live at 3013 Ridgeview Court, and our backyard abuts the church's backyard. My wife was unable to be here tonight, but I've got a letter from the two of us to the Board of Trustees. We've given this request for very much thought over the past couple of months, and the question that we keep asking ourselves is, why would the church spend a substantial sum of funds during the building expansion of constructed infrastructure to support a steeple that needed approval would require a variance of almost 100%. We now realize that they're anticipating the ability to hide behind the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Person Act. This act has been interpreted by many municipalities that the church can get almost anything they want, or the municipality will risk getting sued. Hiding behind this act does not appear to be very neighborly or very Christian. My wife and I attended the Board of Appeals meeting in October and listened to the presentation by the church and others. It was our opinion that the church did not demonstrate the substantial burden of hardship. The church's claim that it does not look like a church surprised us, as we believe it is a great-looking church. It is a crucifix, a sign which portrays religious messages, and the very visible stained glass windows. It truly looks like a church. The church appears to be very successful, as they have approximately 1,100 members, and the recently expanded parking lot appears to be full during services. I have spoken to members of the Board of Appeals, to include the three members who voted in favor of granting the variance. Their comments to me were that they believed the church had met the substantial burden of hardship, but when I asked for specifics, they were unable or unwilling to identify the specific items that they used in determining their vote. All three of the affirmative votes from the Board of Appeals did indicate that the standard was different because the church is a religious organization and affected by the Religious Act. We believe the 33.5-foot variance will have a negative effect on surrounding property values and will establish a precedent which could result in the need to grant many more sizable variances. None of the other churches in the village appear to have steeples close to 60.5 feet above the ground. We are not aware of any discussions the village may have had with the church to see if they would consider a smaller steeple requiring less than a 95% variance. We are hopeful that during your discussions and vote this evening that you'll be able to minimize some of the negative effect on property values as a result of the steeple. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to this issue?
I still have some questions.
Yes.
On the lighting question in the 10 o'clock, I'm confused as to, should the steeple pass, where the status of that is. Because certainly the intent is that it would be a symbol of hope, and, you know, the time to shine a symbol of hope is in the darkness, and that's why you light a steeple, is to light it in the dark. Again, we are a church, and we're in the business of symbol and hope, and that needs to shine in that time of need. We're not some sort of stealth organization doing, we're a church. We help people. We do meals at the Boys and Girls Club. We do meals at the homeless shelter. We do you may be familiar with the Home Sweet Home homeless project, in which we help establish people who are formerly homeless in homes of their own, and we do all that furnishing. We're in the business of hope. I know I speak, well, I can think of several examples, but just one, a man who wrestles with his addiction. And he comes in and he talks and he tells me of his successes, and then he comes in sometimes and tells me of when he has fallen off the wagon, and he worships with us sometimes, but even when he doesn't, it's a power to him to know that we're there. And, you know, to keep that hope lit, that's the whole point of a symbol like this. And as you think of the community that you want to create and guard, the vision that you have for the kind of community that you want to build, to me it would be one that would include symbols of hope that are lit when hope is needed. So,
from what I've heard, trying to address your confusion about the issue, is we're not voting on with regard to the 10 o'clock issue. We're voting on the technical aspects of the proposal. And if I understand Administrator Flukey correctly, that the steeple falls within the village's sign code and then would have to be off, the lights would have to be off at 10 o'clock at night. If your intention is for that not to happen, then I think what Trustee Gast said before comes into effect, that there would have to be we'd have to review that ordinance, and if there would have to be some reference to the Religious Land Use Act, then we would have to go down that route. But as of right now,
okay, so that's in your mind a second step to take a look at that.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is, I hope and trust that this won't become an issue. I mean, I understand everything that you said, and I tend to agree with you. Then again, my house doesn't abut the church. I think what we should do is be proactive on the issue, because I understand that the church wants to light it from 10 o'clock to, for all the reasons that you said, which I think are valid reasons. What we should do is ask our legal counsel, because I think what the church is asking is some direction on the village's position. So we should ask our legal counsel whether it should properly be within the sign code and subject to those restrictions, or whether it's trumped by the Religious Freedom Act. From what little I know about it, I think it probably is. But we should have our legal counsel look at it so that the church can receive a definitive position from the village.
So that would be a separate piece of business, not currently understood.
Right, because that issue isn't before the board tonight. Because, if you look at it abstractly, you're in the sign code, the steeple's in the sign code, whether it should be there, that's what we need to determine. We're not here to tell you whether you can light it after 10 o'clock or not. I mean, the ordinance says you can't. But I think it's incumbent upon the village to answer that question by having our legal counsel, look at the issue and tell us whether the steeple should be in the sign code or whether it's exempted from the sign code, so that we can give, the church some direction in that regard. And I don't envision that there's going to be a problem one way or the other. I think we should be proactive and give you direction and give you the position of the village, whether you can or you can't. But I think we need legal advice on that issue.
And can we get that direction quickly, Beth, in terms of who we talk to, that kind of thing?
Well, I think if it's the consensus of the board that village council should look at it, I suspect that we can get an answer relatively soon. And somebody, Stuart, I can't remember his last name. But
say Dave.
No, I was not talking about Stuart. He made a very nice presentation, by the way. But he mentioned that there was a case, I believe, that somebody was reversed, because they tried to.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Was that you did? Yeah, if you have that authority, maybe you could give it to us, and we can give it to our legal counsel to look at. Because I think you're deserving of an answer.
I can share whatever you like.
I mean, what I was talking about was the case under the Religious Land Use Act, where it struck down a local ordinance, saying, look, you can't apply an ordinance to a steeple.
Your sign ordinance.
Yeah, I thought I heard a specific case, which would be of assistance to our legal counsel, which saves the village money since he doesn't have to dig around and try to find it. He can start by looking at it right away, because I think you deserve an answer, relatively soon. I don't think it's going to be a problem, ultimately, because of all the lighting and engineering that's been done, but we should look at it and give you an answer.
I want to address the second point, too, and to be very, very clear, there was no funny business on the part of the church in terms of, like, a two-step approval process. I was in on the planning team, and at that level, never heard of, it was a total shock that there was going to be a height restriction in any of the stuff that I heard. And Dave apparently was in a different conversation with the architect that I was not. But there was certainly not any, oh, we have to do this in two steps. It was as simple as, we can afford to build this, hey, now we can afford to build this too. It was always an intention that it would be a building with a steeple. So, questions?
Anything further from any of our visitors? Okay, we will take up the rules. Is there a motion with regard to this item, or do you want to continue discussing? Trustee Gast.
I move that we, as the board, ratify the plan commission's approval of the site plan with the deletion of the sauces.
Is there a second? Trustee Gendrich seconds. Discussion? Trustee Green?
I was just going to say, I don't know who else has received phone calls, but I've had several phone calls, which kind of surprised me regarding this issue, because I've heard there was the one neighbor who isn't pleased, and it kind of dismays me that it was zoned in on the one neighbor, because that's actually not who my phone calls were from, thinking this process was very disingenuous with it being due in stepwise fashion, and some of the concerns are, what's next? And, you know, is the sound system next, and that's going to come back, and is the... So, I mean, there's some perceptions out there that I don't think have been addressed, and you may want to address them as a church to, you know, people are thinking this definitely is a disingenuous process with the few phone calls I've had.
And I would say that I would go so far as to say it's disingenuous. I'm just really disappointed. We went through this whole thing with the original construction of the building and whether or not there should be landscaping, and we thought we had reached an agreement and we'll just sort of make sure that everyone's neighborly and gets what they want. And that was kind of a bumpy road, but we seem to have made our way through it. And then there's a whole other process that we had to go to. And I can understand how it's a two-step process in terms of fundraising, but I just wish when the original plans were submitted that instead of it being in the plan as a small, this is where the steeple is going to go, that there was some indication this is going to be a steeple that's going to be 20, 30 feet tall, and there would have been the discussion about that at that time, because I'm convinced that it wasn't intentional. I know these people. I know Mr. Korshavin, I know Mr. Korshavin's wife, and Mr. Baroni, and these are all good people, and I'm convinced that it wasn't intentional or disingenuous. I just, after we went through the process the first time with the building, I just wish we had been maybe a little bit more careful so that we weren't in a position where we had to be asking for variances and going through this again. I'm sure you do agree. So I'm not disappointed in any one person or any group of people. I'm disappointed in our ability to get this right as a community. We had a warrant and we had a shot over the bow when the building was first being constructed. We maybe should have sat down and thought more about where to go next after that. So, Trustee Gast, did you?
Well, I was just going to comment on some people would think that the two-step process was conceivably disingenuous, is the word that's been used. Whether, you know, I totally get it. I mean, you build it when you got the money, and you know, being good stewards of the money, then you don't buy things before you pay for. And it's a good idea. You know, but regardless, you know, if they would have put the steeple in the very first submission, they would have needed a variance then too. You know, so, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's one step or two steps. It's not like they got by with anything. They needed a variance one way or the other. Whether they did it in their first plan or they did it in the second plan, they still would have needed a variance. So they didn't get any leeway from the requirements of the zoning code. I mean, they still had to apply for the variance, you know, regardless of step one or step two. So, I mean, they didn't skirt anything, you know, by doing it in a second, you know, doing it piecemeal.
But the discussion of the height of the steeple would have been in the context of the building at that time, rather than building the building
project
and saying, well, what do we do now? We've got a building, we need a steeple, and our architect says the steeple has to be this high or it doesn't really fit with the building that's already there. So you're right, there still would have had been a variance, but there could have been a discussion about the height of the steeple or even the size of the building. Maybe the building would have been 6 feet shorter so that you could, you know, have less of a variance up in the air. We could have had all these discussions up front. So, and I agree. I don't think it was disingenuous or intentional. It just sort of happened, and it's all of our faults for not being more careful as we move forward with this. Trustee Dark.
I just want to comment on that, too, being a person that was in a whole building project of a church. There's just so many things to do and so many things to consider. And raising the funds, and sometimes you take things out and then you have to put them back in when you know you have the money. And I can't fault you at all for doing it in two steps like that. I've been through the process, so.
I can comment to that. On that structural plan, if you look at an original site plan review, if it was looked at carefully, it gives a height limit that we had to stay under for anything that goes in that steeple spot. So we knew 32 feet was the maximum height you could actually put on that spot. Now, Trustee Dart, like you said, my finance guy said, Dave, you can't put that steeple in here. We don't have the funding for it, even though people were giving already, as we were designing the church, a steeple fund had already been created. Because it was in our design process from a previous build, even though the neighbor says, you know, we weren't saying the truth, we polled our parishioners and said, what do you like or dislike about this church? Before the big building went up, it was an education wing we were putting on. And it was that or the sanctuary. We needed education more, but they said, the biggest thing we dislike is it doesn't look like a church. So from that point in 2000, and as we paid that off and got to our next addition, the precept was already in front of us, make this look like a church. And one of the precepts in the design process is that it has to have a steeple. But it went over our $2.2 million that we were allowed to borrow, and it had to be separately funded through members and other giving. It was started before I even put a shovel in the ground, giving towards it, but we didn't have enough to put it in the original building.
Well, I think you said it before. If you had to do it all over again, the original application would have had a handwritten note saying, look, we're going to put a steeple on it somewhere between 20 and 35 feet high. Right. And so we could have had all these discussions before the original site plan review.
Right, and I just want to make sure, structurally, especially as an engineer, I want to make sure it's ready to accept a steeple, and you know, we're not just like have to start all over and take the building apart and
right.
put it up.
Right.
Just one other comment. Hindsight is 20/20. St. Matthew's is missing a bell tower right now, so.
Someone stole it?
No.
It's in
process.
Trustee Kovach.
I am in full support of the motion. A little bit disappointed we're spending so much time on process and where we could have been and what we could have done. But would it be possible to include that lighting in this motion for the overnight lighting or not?
No, it's not in the it's not on the agenda,
no.
Trustee Kovach.
Okay.
I disagree that we're spending too much time on process because, like I said, we went through this once with the original building. We're going through it again. I hate to think we're going to make the same mistake a third time around because we haven't thought about the process enough. Any further discussion? Tracy, you said we're voting on a few things, actually. The lighting for the parking lot, the lighting for the steeple, and the design of the steeple, but not the height of the steeple.
Right.
On what basis would anyone disagree with the design of the steeple?
I don't know. It's just part of the site plan review. It's just like if you're putting the building together and there are some concerns with the design or how that building looks, the site plan review is the process to look at that. Plan commission can look at it, the village board can look at it. So the steeple falls into that same category.
Right.
If there's an issue with that, that's
right.
Your place.
I mean, I can see the lighting to make sure that everything's done their homework, and they clearly have with regard to light spillers and things like that, but the design, I can't imagine on what basis a board would have would object to the design of a steeple. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're good.
I just hand up.
I'm sorry.
I sat through the plan commission hearing, and you know, some of the objections are simply personal taste. You know, versus color, versus surface,
right.
or whatever. So,
right.
Pretty insignificant stuff. So.
And that's what I guess what I was getting at. I mean, I don't know what basis you'd object to the design unless it was something completely obnoxious or unsafe.
Right.
Okay. Now are we ready, Trustee Gedrich?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Thank you. Excuse me. Item number 9, action regarding the implementation of a PTO program. I think I'm going to entertain continued discussion on this before we take a before I take a motion. If you remember from the last time, we were talking about 6 to 8 sick days, the vacation schedule we had, 3 personal days, and then what we were struggling with was this bridge from up to the 30 days and the fact that some employees would not be able to buy down to the 30 days. And so we were trying to find ways to protect folks. And one of the issues was even people who weren't new. You remember we had the whole line of discussion that maybe the new people for the first 2 years, the village would fund that 30-day period, which hopefully they wouldn't have to use, but just in case that we would fund that to get them up to the 30 days for the first 2 years while they could accumulate some sick leave of their own to cover that, or PTO of their own. But then the point was raised, well, there are people who have been here for a long time who may not have enough accumulated sick leave to make it up to that 30 days. And so I think one of the paths we were exploring was, well, what if we just offer it for the first 2 years of the program, anyone can participate in it, and then after that, you'd have to be a new person and you get the first 2 years. But what we didn't, I don't think, nail down was those folks who can't buy down to the 30 days, what's that formula going to look like? Is it going to be entirely on the onus of the employee to cover the period between 30 days and whenever? So I think that was one of the remaining issues that's out there. Tracy, did you have further updates that you wanted to share?
No, just on the counter, there's proposal for the CTO. There was a request at the last meeting that we get some kind of comparison. So the top part of the document that says proposed PTO plan is the top lettering of the document are the two options. Basically, option one is using the vacation schedule that we had talked about that staff had looked at through the process of the personnel manual. Option two was the one suggested by Trustee Zeller, and that's taking the peers' vacation schedule. So that's just giving you a comparison of the number of days and when the days would be implemented. And you have the vacation as the first number, then you have personal days, and then the sick time would be the last number that's shown on each of those where you're calculating out to the amount of days. The bottom is looking at 3 different options for short-term disability. The first option was the one that Steve just mentioned with the village covering 30 days at 100% for the first 2 years, and then or for everybody for the first 2 years, and any new employee would get the first 2 years for that 100% for 30 days, and then the employee would buy down to the income continuation insurance at their expense. Option two is pretty much the Howard. The village of Howard is done with 180 days. The village is self-funding it. With the village paying 75%, the employee would be responsible for 25%. And then income continuation insurance is left as it is. There is no change in that except for the 180 days stands for what it is right now. And then option three was another one that came up through discussing at a staff level was, again, staying with the village covers 30 days at 100%. Those looks at paying income continuation insurance a buy-down to 290 days. The cost on that is approximately $18 per employee per month for that 90-day to go to 90 days. So that was just another option that was thrown out there as well. So that's kind of what, when I listened to the comments and listened to the tape for the discussion that I did this, is what I got out of the discussion of the things that were still kind of standing out there or that were people were maybe leaning one way or the other towards.
Can everyone buy down to 90 days? Is there a...
It's the same as 1 to 30 days.
Some can and some can't.
Some can, some can't.
So we still have this, although we had the discussion, it's probably not going to be very many people. There's still a possibility that there'd be some people who wouldn't be able to buy down to even 90 days.
Right.
Just be dark.
Confusion question. I don't quite get why people can't buy down. What is that exactly? And I did miss the last discussion.
anybody that is on the plan now that, let's say, 180 days or any number higher than 30, they have to do a medical, they have to fill out a medical form, basically. And then they do, they look into that, the insurance company looks into that, so they may deny based on medical eligibility. They did give me a criteria that they look at or what would not allow someone to buy down. They didn't get that specific with me, but there is a chance, and hopefully there aren't any employees that would have that issue, that everybody is doing good and they wouldn't have that issue and they could buy down 30. But you just never know. It's just a chance that that would be out there.
Trustee Gast.
Well, I think at the last meeting we spent, I think, a fair amount of time on option one, which I think was kind of the consensus. But I think our discussion in terms of the lack of insurability people, the ones that can't buy down due to pre-existing medical conditions, I think we discussed something along the lines of if you have a proven lack of insurance insurability, which means you get a letter from the insurance company saying we aren't going to let you buy down to anything. Well, only let you buy down to 120 days or whatever it is, that upon proven lack of insurability for a buy-down after exhaustion of PTO, then the village will cover 75% of your wage through the 180-day elimination. I mean, that was a discussion we had, which was, because the whole premise of option one is that the employees have the ability to buy-down. Whether they choose to or not, that's right. Their choice, but they can if they want to. But I do think we need to have a stopgap for the ones that, because of medical conditions, they can't buy down because then they don't have any option. And my thought was something, along the lines of, after you've exhausted your PTO, then, we'll cover 75%, through the 180-day elimination period, which is kind of a variation of the Village of Howard, which one it is, but option two, but only as to those people that can't buy down.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned that using the PTO, that's out of the equation for all other employees, right? There was at one point we were talking about first you have to use your PTO and then you can participate.
Right.
I think we removed that altogether.
And we did. I mean, my thought of reinserting it into this stopgap thing is we're going to cover 75%, conceivably up to 180 days. So you better exhaust your PTO before we start kicking.
I understand. I just wanted to remind folks of where we were, because I know for quite a while we were assuming that everyone would have to use their PTO before they were able to use any of these benefits. But this would only be for folks who cannot buy down. Trustee Zeller.
I have a comment and then a question. The comment is on the short-term disability item. And based on our previous discussion, the more I've thought about this, looked at the complexity of the solutions we're trying to come up with, I am no longer in support of a short-term disability gap coverage of any type. I believe we should leave this alone and allow the employees to buy down using the long-term disability option. So as far as that entire short-term disability section that's written in red into our proposed document, I would not support that, and I would suggest removal of that topic and that issue. And secondly, on the sick leave payout, can you help me determine the rate of pay utilized in payout calculation shall be employee's rate of pay on January 1st, 2014. That would apply for all employees, regardless of their tenure. Then. Is that right? Okay. All right. That answers my question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bell, can you explain the short-term disability? So you're talking about the red card in the personnel manual is what you're talking about, right?
Correct. So I'm
so you're saying
proposing that we eliminate option one, two, and three in their entirety, and that the the employee be allowed to still buy down to 30 days as they wish.
So then the village would not get involved in, like, option one, take as an example, the 30 days, they would not...
The village would not get involved in all, in any way, in the short-term disability topic.
Trustee Zeller, can I ask what's complex about it? Because it involves only a subset of people, and there's a... Is that why?
Or we're creating at least one, if not two, policies. The option one involves a 2-year transition period,
mm-hmm.
And then continues on for any new employees after that 2-year transition period. So we have costs involved for 2 years plus as we move forward. Then we have costs involved for any situation where the 75% participation rate would come into play that Trustee Gass mentioned.
Right.
And in my opinion, it's the responsibility of the employee to cover their short-term disability. Okay. We're already offering them the ability to reduce their risk by buying down to the 30-day level. And we're providing at 100% village cost the 180-day and beyond long-term disability level.
Right.
So I believe it's the employee's responsibility to handle the first 6 months, and they're able to, if they wish, to buy down.
Okay.
So it's a fairly substantial benefit, in my opinion.
Okay. I mentioned it as you made your way, your preamble to your comments, that it was the complexity of it. It's more about the benefit,
the
extent of the benefit rather than the complexity of the system.
Yes, I think that we don't necessarily need to add more twists and turns to the PTO policy. So that's my reasoning.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just clarify one thing for Trustee Zeller? When you talk about a cost, I just want to be clear that when we budget for somebody, we budget for a full year. And if I happen to be out for 30 days because of an illness, that cost is already in the budget. And if the village is covering it at 100%, that there's no additional cost, I guess, to the village. Is what I want to make clear. It's allowing an employee to use the time that has been budgeted for already. Granted, they're not working, so you're right, it is a great benefit because they're still getting paid, but there's no additional cost to the village because the amount of that pay is already in the budget.
Unless we have to pay overtime for someone
to cover
or to hire an LTE to...
Yes.
So if we have a special equipment operator that is in this predicament, then we still have to have somebody that operates the vehicle or the trash truck, whatever.
Right.
It's different with the difference between the administrative employee and the front line workers. But certainly, there is some cost where the work doesn't get done.
Are you suggesting that if an administrator is not there, then no one will notice and we can
tease it? For 30 days.
Yeah. For me, I always am putting this in the context of what's going to actually happen. And I just assume that people are not going to use this. So the costs that we're dreaming up, it's just not going to happen. If we have someone using this once every year, once every other year, I would be really shocked. So it is a benefit, and I guess there could be some costs if we had to hire or pay overtime, but it's probably not going to work out that way. I think we're kind of dreaming up a worst-case scenario. So, and I think it's a really nice gesture to let people, new employees, know that we want to make sure that you're covered for your first 2 years here, just in case. Probably not going to happen, but just in case, so that you have a safety net.
What's been our experience with that in our history, fairly recent history?
I know Claire did a document that was presented at our last meeting from 2009 to 2013,
And almost every year we have one or two people, and then the last year, I think 13, we had like four or five. So it hasn't been, you know, a ton of people over those 13 years, or you know, 5 years, there were approximately maybe 8 or 9 people total that had FMLA of some amount and ended up off.
How many in the work comp?
Work comp would be totally separate. That would not fall under this because that would be under another category that won't.
How many though in that area? It is somewhat related.
This year has been really good. We've only had two incidents. We've had only, you know, with workman's comp, since I've been here, we've had quite a few workman's comp, but I don't think we've had people off for extended periods of time with the workman's comp. So they've had injuries, but they haven't been off, you know, maybe a day or just to go get checked out. So I don't think we've had anybody off for an extended period of time with workman's comp.
Further discussion? Trustee Green?
Just got to echo Paul's concerns with the short-term disability. I mean, that typically, see a lot of room for abuse in that. And when we talk about fairness between employees, it just, I don't see any way I understand what we're trying to do. And I'm behind trying to cover people. However, covering salaries 100% to be out from day one, I have never heard of that happening. So that's where I have heartburn with that piece.
Okay. Trustee Zeller?
I guess I would take it one step further and say that I don't want to do anything as far as a policy goes that encourages disability, either short or long term, in any way. And this is at what point, how far do you go as an employer in terms of your ability to manage the productive hours that the village is responsible for, and then implementing a short term disability policy that we might have, like Tracy say, four employees. How are we going to cover, you know, that without cost to the village?
Well, if it's four employees in a year, it would have to be four employees that are covered under they're either in their first 2 years or it's in the first 2 years of the program. After that, the four employees would have to be new employees or they wouldn't be taking part of this short-term disability policy. So it would only be a subset of the total employees of the village that would even be eligible to use it.
But if you take it one step further then into the after 30 days, to pick up the gap after 30 days, as Trustee Gast had suggested, then you've got a difference, you've created different classes of employees between the ones that have bought down and the ones who have chosen consciously to not buy down to 30 days or to 90 days. So I just say we leave it alone, and they have an advantageous benefit here to use their long-term disability in a short-term manner.
I didn't understand the second part of what you said. Some people will buy down and some people won't, and we've created what have we created? They have the option to buy down or not.
They do, correct. So if they choose not to,
then
how does this handle the 30 to 180 day period?
Well, if they haven't bought down, then they suffer the consequences of not buying down.
But in what Trustee Gast had brought up, the village would pay 75%.
For those
of the rate of pay.
Have been refused.
Those who can't buy down by
themselves.
Have been
refused.
And we could discuss that too. Maybe it's a 50-50 split. Maybe the employee pays 75%.
Yeah, my comment was one of those that have no option and can't buy down because the insurance company said you can't.
Yeah, and that's, that would most likely be, from an actuarial point of view, the employees that are going to use, that are going to be out on disability. So, I mean, how big of a security blanket do we have, or do we need to provide? That's my argument. I'm saying just leave it alone and allow the employee to manage their own disability risks.
My concern is the new people, is that, you know, we're going to change this policy and they won't have any accrued days to save up. So they, even if they want to manage their own risk, they can't. They can just not take a vacation for the first 2 years, or not take any time off for the first 2 years, and that's all they can do. And that's all they can do to manage their risk, is to take no time off for the first 2 years, and then they're at the point where they can buy, you know, they can make it between the time that they get sick and when they bought down to the 30 days. And to me, that's just not. I agree, you want to encourage people to manage their own risk, but you don't want to set up a scenario where it's impossible.
Well, if they, and I would counter with, if they are offered 14 or 21 days or 18 days every year of their employment, every year, they have that starting out bank, then they have to cover from 14 days to 30 days. That's out of their savings. I don't think that's too much to ask.
So they would save. They would save. They would take a week off the first year, because I think they get 20. Is it 21?
21 first year.
So they take a week of time off the first year between sick leave and whenever, taking a few days off. They have 14 that they're rolling over, and they get sick, then they've got the 14, and then they just make up for between 14 and 30.
And we're talking 14 days here, 14 working days. And we're talking in terms of months, calendar days, in the disability policy.
The 30 days is a calendar month?
Let me double check.
Zeller, can I ask what caused the change of heart? I think this was your idea when it first came up last time, to have the village sort of provide just sort of reflection on it and thinking about all the benefits as a package that got you to this point.
I wasn't really in favor of any type of short-term gap in coverage. When it was brought up that some of the employees cannot qualify for the buy-down of the long-term coverage, that got me thinking a little bit, but the more I thought about it, I say we provide this PTO number of days, and it's the responsibility, and it's also a benefit to the employees that they can manage those days, whereas they don't have the same flexibility
now
that we're providing with this program. So, and I say it just not be a part of our employment package.
It's calendar days.
Calendar days. So 14 days would basically cover 3 out of the 4 weeks that a person's out.
Yeah.
Trustee Gaff.
I mean, I was just thinking that, I mean, I think it should be a benefit. I like option one. But I was thinking that we might need to somehow tighten that up a little bit. I mean, the assumption is presumably everybody can buy it under 30. And we'll leave the uninsureds out there, lack of insurance, whatever that's out. But they can buy down to 30. I mean, I think that this option one should only kick in if they have a short-term disability that exceeds a certain number of days, you know, 45 or something like that. Because otherwise, I guess tighten up a little bit, what I'm fearful of is somebody has a 21-day short-term disability. I mean, they're never even going to, whether they bought down or they didn't buy down, doesn't make any difference at that point in time. I don't want to cover somebody for something that's not on its way to being a long-term disability. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Or even like several 5-day ones.
You get somebody with a 14-day disability twice a year. You know, I don't think we should be paying. Right. I mean,
and not from day one. I've never seen a short-term disability policy that pays from day one. Usually there's waiting period. So, I mean, that's why this whole 100% at day one, just, like, I've never seen that, ever.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to abuse it any more than all of you do, but I definitely want to provide a safety net for those folks who haven't had time to accrue days. And the new people are going to be the lowest paid people as well, so they might be the least likely to be able to afford to get sick and just not get paid for a couple of weeks. Trustee Zeller.
Can I ask how and who determines if the person is disabled? What is the written document or the what factor do they have to have a doctor's certification that they are disabled?
You could probably tie that definition into the long term disability policy definition of disability.
We need return to work clearance.
Right.
But even when we write those, if it's short-term disability, it goes usually before short-term disability people to review. And even if we write it, sometimes short-term disability says no. So if we're doing that on our own, who does that for us? I mean, if it's the village deciding to... Exactly. So it's like that whole process is how do you put that in place?
What about this? Sorry, Trustee.
That's right. No, go ahead.
So, you know, I haven't really thought about what Trustee Zeller said. 14 days is really, you know, isn't less than half of the up to the 30 days, because we're talking about working days versus calendar days. What about if we increase the total number of days off for the first couple of years? And then reduced it. It doesn't seem quite fair, though.
If
an employee gets more time off than somebody who's been here a while. I mean, they wouldn't get more time off because there's a schedule, but there would be just some extra days built in there for them to use in case.
Just if we go back to the last our last discussion, Clara had mentioned that in her opinion, it was fairly prevalent that short-term disability insurance was offered for employers in Brown County in this area, and I would beg to differ. I think if we did a survey, that we would find that it's scarce, rare, and that the long-term disability policies offered by employers are oftentimes partially or totally paid for by the employee, not the employer. It would be an employer-offered benefit so that employees are covered in a pool. But I venture to guess that the long-term coverages are not across the board 100% fully paid by the employer either. So in this point that she brought up, that this is just a standard benefit that we should be providing, I take difference to that. I object to that.
I'm not sure if that's true either, but I do know that I haven't seen any really good total compensation studies either, because I think that folks who are running organizations of this size probably are getting paid a little bit more than our administrator is, for example. So the salaries at the village are not what the private sector is. The benefits might be a little bit better, but that was a concerted decision a long time ago as to what, you know, what direction that public employees were going to go. Trustee Kopisch, I'm sorry.
Just a comment. I totally agree with Paul's assessment on this, adding complexity and the fact that, you know, this is a generous package to begin with, in my belief or my observation with dealing with a number of companies on the private side, that it would seem to me if there's, we're observing that needs aren't being met, that in a year or two you can add it. I don't think we have to go with the whole package at this time. And I think that would address, you know, maybe Lynn's concern as well. We just got this piece tonight, too.
Yeah.
Well, we have to make some decisions pretty soon if we're going to start January 1st with any of this. We're going to have to make some decisions either tonight or at the second meeting in December. Trustee Gemmings.
Do we have an income continuation program now?
Yes.
And what does that cost? How expensive is that?
The ICI insurance is attached to our Wisconsin retirement plan.
Okay.
So any community that is in Wisconsin retirement automatically gets ICI as part of the benefits if they choose to take it. The 180-day window that it kicks in at 180 is at no cost, because any member community that's in Wisconsin retirement, that is part of what the plan provides. So when the Village of Alloway offers ICI insurance to our employees, and we offer that 180 days, which is what we do, it is no cost to the employee, it is no cost to the Village of Alloway. Now when you start looking at buy downs down to, you know, 30 days, 30, 60, 90, 120 are the elimination periods that are offered through this plan. The employer cannot go down any lower. The employee can, and they, when they sign up, like when I first got hired, if I signed up for 30 days, I would automatically get into 30 days. If I was at 180 when I signed up, then I would have to go through the evidence of insurability to buy down to the 20 days. The 30 days, I'm sorry. Cost for a 30-day, it's depending on how much you make. So if someone's making, let's say, $40,000 a year, it's $25.63 a month to buy down to the 30 days. If someone's making $63,000, it's $40 a month.
Per month.
Right.
So splitting two paychecks or whatever. Okay.
Yes. And then it's, you know, for 90 days, it's about half that amount, and it's kind of divided out that way. But 180 is no cost.
And do a lot of our employees participate in the buy-down at this point?
We have probably a handful, maybe a dozen or so, that do buy-down to different amounts.
Okay.
And then there's also a supplemental that you can purchase. So if your salary is higher than $64,000, then you can get a supplemental, and I think we have one employee that takes a supplemental, and then it would buy up to another $64,000, so if they were out, they would be eligible to go up to 120.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. All right, where would you like to go from here? It seems like we have a few things that we're kind of agreeing on and a few things that we aren't, and I know that's all sort of, they're all connected, so we can't really vote on certain elements of this. But
another question on the option, the two options here. It's referenced that the DePere option is in the process of probably becoming obsolete. So the value of that is iffy, questionable. I'm not sure what it'll be replaced by, you know, as an example, so I don't know.
And DePere is in the process right now of looking at a PTO program, but it will not be implemented probably until 2015. They were going through the personnel manual and doing a bunch of other things, and then they're going to look at PTO for...
Okay.
Next year, and see what they're going to implement. So yeah, that was why that comment was on there, that they are looking at overall, and then they will no longer have the silos like this is based upon.
Tracy, is there any written in here about the accumulation of sick days if someone's out on either the short-term disability, the way we've defined it, or the long-term disability?
I'm I'm sorry, say that again.
At one point, there was a discussion about the accumulation of days off of PTO. When a person is out on short-term or long-term disability, the way we've defined them, in option one, is it in here anywhere as to whether that happens or doesn't happen?
We didn't get into the specifics of that, but most of the plans that I looked at, if you are off on a long-term or short-term disability, you do not accrue PTO during that time.
Right.
I know we had talked about it when we discussed this early on about continuing to accrue it, but it isn't typically accrued during that time in most plans that I've seen.
Right.
So when you're off, you are taking a benefit, and then you are not accruing a benefit during that time.
Right, okay. Trustee Dart?
I just want to throw this in, and I don't know how it's even work in, but if we thought about something like a concern for the new people in the first couple of years, but some of it is they could use all of their 21 days, right? And they would have nothing. Or they could put some of their 21 days aside for sick leave. And maybe we could just look at matching some of their sick leave bank. If they save X amount, we can give them, you know, like a 401k plan sort of, a matching to help them bank something at that time. Don't know exactly how that would look, just a way of only encouraging the people that are trying to build up their sick leave.
Tracy, we had talked to one time about being able to donate carry over PTO to someone else.
Yeah, and communities do that. They're all set up slightly different, but most of them are, if someone is out, the administrator gets a letter out to everybody saying, you know, so-and-so is out, they've run out of any time, and then individuals can choose to donate, and up to a certain amount of time, you can put a limit on it, or you can just leave it open, and then that time is used by that employee that needs it. So that is an option that we could put into the plan as well, and then it's totally an option to the employees. It's something that they're required to do or have to do, or it's totally their choice.
Voluntary.
So it's kind of a nice addition to a plan that would help out somebody that just doesn't have a time.
If we choose that option, though, if we choose the option to just sort of stay where it is and have no short-term, you know, gap coverage, I would strongly recommend that something like that be in there to at least have the potential to serve as a safety net for the new folks. Trustee Zeller?
On the bottom of page one, the increment that PTO can be taken in one quarter of an hour, is that something, where did that come from, and what is that? What is the basis for that?
I think that just was a discussion internally to be allowed to take a quarter of an hour of PTO time. It varies in plans. Again, some are an hour, some are half an hour, some are a quarter of an hour of time. So it's just an increment of time that you would have to be able to use your PTO from. So that's just something I think internally with staff wanting to have a little more flexibility with the PTO if you don't take it at a quarter hour increments.
Currently, so sick leave can be used in quarter hours if you need 45 minutes.
What was that doing?
Just a point of leave.
Currently, we allow it for sick leave.
Right.
In 0.25. So, administratively, that's manageable?
Yeah, we're doing it now with different leaves that we have, so that works.
And the top of page three, the years of service schedule on the top of page three. I'd like to ask Brad and Debbie, as the tenured employees, if that is in line with what the present schedule allows, and if that is fair in your opinion, to pay out at those years of service and those levels.
This is currently what's in the personnel manual and has been in the union contracts.
In the contracts too, mm-hmm. as well too. Okay.
I know we were kind of all thinking we might be able to get out of a second meeting in December. I kind of like to think about this and mull it over. I think I found some of the things that Trustee Zeller has been saying is pretty compelling, and there might be some other options. I'm still leaning towards option one on this.
Is there other research, anything that you want done in specific areas that you're talking about that you want us to do any more fact-finding or anything that you can think of or to bring to the next meeting?
Tracy, I think you mentioned in here that if the village bought down for all employees the elimination period of 90 days, it would be about an $18 expense per employee.
Yes, it probably would be about $18 per month per employee. So to go down to 90 days.
Again, like I said, it depends on the salary of the employees, so that's just an estimate of what it would be.
Anything further? Is there a motion with regard to this item?
Can we just clarify what the issues are right now? I mean, what would we think? This is kind of what Tracy's asking. What more can we add to this other than just more discussion?
I don't know if there's any data unless you want to do some verification on, you know, how prevalent short-term disability policies are or some of the things that we've been guessing are prevalent or not very prevalent. But for me, that's not what I need to think about. I just need to think about the risk that we're going to hand off to employees and whether or not the level of safety net for new folks or folks who haven't accumulated enough PTO already.
So one of our main concerns, I understand you saying, is that it's our new employees and how to best handle those.
New employees are employees who just haven't
accumulated
a lot of sick leave that they could use right now. And you know, you obviously want to be fair to the people who've been here a long time mm-hmm. and have accumulated sick leave, and make sure that we don't develop policies that over advantages, you know, either people who've been here and have spent everything they had, or new people,
and find the right balance.
Find the right balance. Yeah, that's what to me this is all about, is finding the right balance. But I also found something that Trustee Copas said to be compelling, is that we could, you know, take the first step, and then if it seems to be a problem, we find people in tough situations without a safety net, and then we could add it later. So, Trustee Copas.
Yeah, just one other comment. Aside from being concerned about the employees, let's be concerned about the people that are paid for it as well. And I'm wondering if there might be some way, the way of research, Tracy, to check with a few of our larger employers in the village and see what their policies are.
So, Paul, you're talking private?
I'm talking about private, yeah.
In details of their policies, what's the waiting period, and then also how much is paid, because some short-term disability policies do not pay 100%. Also, quite a few have waiting periods. So, and then the other thing I'd like to know, too, is if we're going to self-insure part of this, because Ray brought up a good issue about, you know, even as healthcare providers, we write for short-term disability and we write for return to work, but that's sent to a review before it's ever approved. So do then, if we're going to self-insure part of that, with health insurance, you have to have a TPA when you do that, that administers and reviews cases. Do we have to do the same thing if we self-insure for short-term disability? I'm not sure if that's looked on as an insurance, what we have to do with that. So,
well, I think and I think as we're considering or further considering the issue, I think one of the comments I think Lynn mentioned before, you know, should be kept in mind, you know, in terms of, you know, we can define, I mean, if we want to elect one of these short-term disability gap options, we have to somehow determine what is a disability.
Yeah.
And it's easy enough to correspond the definition to the long-term disability policy and then say that's what equals a disability. But the logistical problem is if you go to Sun Life or Unum, they got professionals that can look at medical records and figure out whether somebody is quote-unquote disabled or not. We don't necessarily have that capacity. I mean, how are we supposed to figure that out? Or would one of the options only come into play once they are, in fact, granted long-term disability? You know, but then it mitigates the benefit because that determination is not going to come for a while.
Right.
You know, and then they're without, you know, the pay. I mean, just one of the other things to consider as we, you know, take a break from this issue until the next one.
Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gaffney.
I'll move to table it to the next meeting of the village board.
Is there a second? Trustee Dark. Excuse me, sir, do you have something to add? Someone out here, I keep hearing a voice out here. If you'd like to add to the discussion, please just raise your hand. I'd be happy to call on you and see if the board would like to suspend the rule. Discussion? Trustee Zeller?
I'm ready to vote, you know, tonight if this, I know that there's a request for some additional information, but I'm going to vote no on the motion to postpone because I'm ready to do it tonight. So that's all. I'm not, okay. Not it's a friendly no.
Okay. Trustee Gass and second Trustee Dart.
Okay.
Could you just for the record I'd like to know what your proposal would be, and that would be something that I'll think about as a package if the motion to postpone carries.
Well, if I made a motion to approve,
yes,
or to implement,
yeah, you're ready to vote. Yeah.
Then I would, you know, I would be ready to vote. But there's a motion to postpone,
right?
And I'm not going to make it. I don't think you can make a substitute motion in a motion to postpone. So, but you know, I'm
not asking you to do that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if we were voting tonight, because you said I'm ready to vote. What would
yes.
you What would you vote yes on?
I'd have to lay that out. I would have to lay that out section to section.
Okay.
As far as what I would, you know, what I would vote on. But I would not vote for a policy that includes a short-term gap. And I think we should leave this alone and leave this at the 180-day level that is provided at this point with the buy-down option. I think we should avoid
100% the employee buy-down.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. That helps. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Action regarding the broker listing for the former Village Hall site property. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move that we reaffirm the initial vote, which was to award the listing contract to Bandy's Inc.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Discussion? Have we explored all options for the proposal that was discussed in closed session? I know there was an initial contract and it didn't look good.
Last word I got was it's not going to go.
Even on the new idea.
But in any listing contract that we award, we can build an exception or a caveat that if something along the lines of that occurred, that there would be no commission due in all.
Further discussion?
Just that we had discussed all of the candidates, in a sense, merits of each, some living, owning businesses in the village. So I just want to, I guess, put that out there, that all those things were considered.
Yes. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Roll, please.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Trustee Gass, could I ask that that caveat that you mentioned be put in the agreement with vendors ended?
Yeah, I mean,
if something like this
idea
emerges, sure, that we would have a...
I'd be happy to look at it, or Dennis can, but there's typically an exclusion or exception portion of the standard listing contract, so you can carve out people that have already expressed interest in the Village Hall site, saying that they somehow come back if there's not a commission going on, because we've got some others, too.
Right.
They've expressed some interest, and we found them.
Right.
So it's not unusual to build in those exceptions to say if this person ultimately buys it, there's no commission doing it, because we already were introduced.
But as you know, it might not involve a purchase. It might involve some other things. And so I just wanted to make sure the language is pretty explicit.
I can work with Tracy on that.
Trustee Zeller?
I was just going to say that before, I would assume that, Steve, that you would sign the listing contract.
Yeah, I think that's helpful.
So that before you would actually sign it, that we establish that exclusion list.
Right.
Yeah, so Tracy, I mean, all the different people that have, you know, given us offers or expressed an interest, we should compile those to put it in the exclusion.
Item number 11, action regarding correspondence asking the board to consider cutting their compensation in half. Would you like to entertain discussion before I take a motion on this?
Sure.
Okay. Is there a discussion with regard to this item?
Well, I can maybe suspend the rules. I think Mr. Collins wanted to speak.
Okay. We can do that first. Usually we entertain some discussion amongst board members, but we can do that if you prefer. Sure, we'll suspend the rules. Mr. Collins, would you like to speak with regard to this issue?
Yes. Pat Collins, 2310 Main Wall Street. After the earlier discussion, I hope all the board members now see the light, and if not, when the steeple is built, you can go look at
Mr.
The
Collins,
light.
You're being asked to comment on the item on the agenda. On the agenda. If you want to talk about the steeple, you have
to. Yeah, I'll be working on that.
Okay.
The thing is that this item was put out to you earlier last month, and the item itself was put onto this agenda, which is after you passed your budget for the year, and I think that maybe that was intentional, I'm not sure. But at any rate, the thing is that's the way it worked out. So if somebody says we can't do anything on it because the budget has already passed, well, so be it. We had an earlier discussion as far as the size of the board. And at that time there, it was, well, let's let the people decide. That was first brought up, and that vote was pretty much unanimous as far as letting the people decide. Then it was reconsidered, and, well, wait a minute now, we don't want the people to decide. We know better. And so we're going to say the board should be at 7, and that vote was made. So be it. Basically, it was, well, now we know better than the public as far as a referendum. As far as the compensation, I think that considering listening to the board tonight on preparedness, I think maybe a pay cut would be in order. I think many board members on several subjects tonight haven't done their homework. But so be it, that's the way your board operates. The idea is to cut the compensation in half, and I realize now that if we can't do it right away, we could possibly do it for the term of the village president and work it out in the years out from there. That's one method of handling this. Otherwise, the board itself could just make a vote that from now on we're going to cut our salary in half, and that would settle it. Now, I don't know how many excuses we're going to have tonight. I was kind of surprised by the list of excuses why you couldn't cut the board. You were important. You all add to the board, and so on and so forth. Now, if we look at the Village of Alloway,
You have many committees and boards. How many are compensated? You have the Board of Appeals. You have the Recreation. You have all these committees, and none of them work for money. They're all put in many hours, and there's no compensation. They do it because they love the village. And it was brought up at the meeting where we were talking about the board size. Well, we're not in for the money, was said. We're in it because of dedication to the village. Well, that's fine. But let's see now if this board is willing to reduce its salary. And I know there's many excuses out there. Well, other communities pay such and such. That can be a good excuse. But maybe this board could show some leadership in reducing salaries and maybe start a lead that other municipalities might follow. So I don't know how many excuses we're going to come up with as far as not lowering our salaries. We're important. We need it. We work hard. I mean, I heard it all before. But as I mentioned earlier, this board, on a couple of subjects tonight, hasn't done their homework. So I don't know how much more you need to be paid to be prepared on a subject when you come to a meeting. I'm not sure. There was a lot of, as a matter of fact, I think on some subjects tonight, and second from the last one, if you would have voted one way or the other, I'm not sure any of you could have written down what you really voted on or the repercussions of it. Maybe that subject was better left to labor negotiations. So when it comes down to it, this is what I'm asking, that you cut your pay in half. And like I said earlier, you're not in it for the money. You're in it for the dedication to the village, just like all the other committees and boards.
Mr. Collins, you have something more to add? I think you were
trying to repeat some of your points.
So
is there a time limit?
There's no time limit unless you're not adding anything to what you've already said. Do you have something new
to
add?
Well, I guess all I can add is I hope you all had a good Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas. And I hope you all, after your vote tonight on your salaries, when a steeple is built, you all will see the light. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Hearing none, we'll take up the rules. Discussion amongst the board. Trustee Zeller.
I think Randy had his hand up first. But
okay.
Trustee Gass, I
will let you defer. Trustee Gass.
Yeah, just to respond to Mr. Collins. Over my tenure on this board, you know, I've always taken great pride and habit in listening to the concerns of my constituents. I've also many times found that they have a lot of better ideas than the board members themselves. I take exception to you, Mr. Collins, to a couple of your recent proposals. You call this board irresponsible. You call this board cavalier. You call this board autocratic. And I couldn't disagree with you more. And I think the unjustified assertions that you have made are not even worthy of additional comment. I find it interesting that you brought to this board a suggestion that we reduce our board complement from 7 to 5. I find it interesting because you sat on this board.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Trustee Gass. Could you direct your comments
I'll address it in the third person instead of directly to Mr. Collins?
Thank you.
I find it interesting that this gentleman brought to the board a suggestion of reducing the complement. The gentleman who's complaining sat on this board from 1986 to 1996. He sat on this board from 1999 to 2005.
Border, this is a personal attack.
I'm talking about the merits of the proposal.
He's talking about the merits of the proposal, and he has the floor, Mr. Collins.
All this time, it was a 7-member board. During that tenure and that history, not a motion to reduce the board complement to 5. Now that that issue has been resolved, we now have a new issue that's being raised, a new political endeavor, asking that we reduce our compensation. And Mr. Collins issued us a letter, which has been received into the record, in which he writes, overall elected officials are paid at a higher rate than they deserve. This is due to voting for their own raises without citizen input. As was said on the meeting of November 5, 2013, concerning a referendum on board size, paraphrase, the people of Alloway have no idea of what the board does, and they're not educated enough to vote on a referendum. We, the board, know what is best for them. He then shames a few of us for reconsidering that. And that he believes that in times when taxes and fees are high, it's incumbent upon us to do the right thing and reduce our compensation in half. One thing is, I've looked at our neighboring municipalities, and we are definitely in line in the compensation being paid the trustees and the president as compared to other municipal entities in our geographic area. And to make the record very clear, this current board has not voted to increase its salary at all. I want to make sure that everybody understands that. With some of the aspersions being made against this board, it seems like we've willy-nilly raised our compensation every year, every other year, every third year. That isn't the case. The salary that this current board gets paid has not changed since April 2001. When the board compensation went from $6,600 to $6,732. 2001 was the last time this board looked at the issue of compensation. It hasn't changed in 12 years. Not once since I've been on this board, starting in 2006, has the issue of increasing board compensation even come to the table. It hasn't been discussed as an issue. What I find particularly disturbing and disingenuous about this particular request is that the last time the board raised its salary, effective April 2001, it was at the insistence of Mr. Collins, who is now here complaining that the board is overpaid, underworked. And I have the meeting minutes, which I'll read into the record. November 30, 1999. Collins asked to discuss compensation for the village board since the last monetary increase was in 1991. He suggested a 2% increase to reflect inflation and to keep with the compensation set by the ad hoc committee. He asked for public input. Current compensation for trustees is $6,600 and $8,200 for the president. He, Mr. Collins, felt a 2% increase per year since 1991 would bring them up to date with what the committee had set. The increase would not affect the 2000 budget, since it would not go into effect until April 2001. Then a Mr. Krebsbach of 256 Dauphin Street asked who votes on the increase, the board or the public. He questioned a 2% increase for each of the last 8 or 9 years, making an increase of 16 to 18%, to which board member Collins responded. He explained that there had not been an adjustment since 1991, and inflation has gone up approximately 2% each of those years. Then, the ultimate ordinance increasing the board salary, which once again didn't, was in 2001, 12 years ago. Ordinance 2000-03 increased the board salary. Collins moved to adopt the ordinance. So I find it highly disturbing, disingenuous, political muckraking to be able to come to this board and complain that we're overpaid and underworked. He was the one that did it the last time. So I think in light of that, I don't think that there's any credibility at all to this current suggestion. I don't think the board should take one more step to even consider the issue. I think it should be a dead issue, because I think it's being brought for improper purposes to malign and embarrass and to just chastise this board for no legitimate purpose. He's the one that did it the last time, 12 years ago. So I think my recommendation is we take no action on it at all.
Trustee Zeller?
I was prepared to make the motion that we maintain the present trustee and village president salary as is. But it sounds like if we just take no action, that is equivalent to that. So I was prepared to make that motion and then speak on that. So that's what I was going to do.
Further discussion? Trustee Gendron?
You know, I think Trustee Gass probably covered most of these things, but indeed, there really has been an increase in a number of years. The rates are currently in line with everything else. We were fortunate at the last board member election to have 10 candidates that run, so we're blessed in this community to have people that want to lead, but I think compensation helps for the time spent. I also disagree with the allegation that we didn't do our homework. These are some pretty complicated issues that affect some people that are very important to us, those being our village staff. And for us to make decisions when we're not sure of what all the ramifications are, I don't think is wise and a good use of your resources or ours either. So given all of that, I certainly wouldn't vote to change anything in the compensation package or the number of board members. I think this system works well, and I think Mr. Collins served on this board and would have had to agree at the time that it worked well then.
Trustee Zeller.
And further, I would just, for the record, I would really take offense with the allegation that we're not prepared. The village staff prepares us for these meetings with all the supporting documents. For our Public Works Committee meetings, where we are prepared at least 10 days in advance with the supporting documents that I receive and have to study. There's just as much work in Public Works Committee as there is in the entirety of the village board meetings, and I'd really have to argue that we're not prepared. I personally feel I put a great deal of effort into preparing for the meeting. So, you know, I will not accept that as a blanket statement.
Yeah, I did a little cost of living adjustment using the CPI, and not only has the compensation not increased in years, we've fallen farther and farther behind. So that 6,700, is that what trustees get paid? 67 and change 10 years ago was worth a lot more than it is today, and so that has to be taken into consideration as well. I was the dissenting vote. It was claimed that it was virtually unanimous. I think that was a reference to the fact there was one dissenting vote for the reducing the board size, and that was me. I didn't agree with it. I think we have a good board. I think we have a diversity of opinions. We argue about things. I think we do have a pretty conservative board with regard to the speed at which we make decisions, and we have been criticized by other folks for taking too long and postponing items to future meetings. I take that as constructive criticism. It's part of my nature. I'd rather mull things over, and sometimes I mull them over too much and overanalyze things and don't get off the dime quick enough, and that's something that I can work on. But I'd rather do things right the first time than to do them over again. And so I'm relatively comfortable with that, but it's something that we have heard from other residents as well, that they'd like to see us make decisions in a more timely fashion. And for me, it's hard to wrap your mind around all these things sometimes, and even if you prepare for days in advance, things come up. Tonight, things came up. People said things that I just hadn't thought of it from that perspective, and it gave me a new insight. And rather than sort of make a decision for the sake of making a decision, I want to mull them over, but that's sort of who I am. So I don't agree with the proposal either. I think I stated in the previous meetings when we were talking about reducing the board size, if this is an issue of money, I would rather see the compensation reduced than the board reduced. I'd rather see neither, because I don't think it's going to have advantageous effects. But if it did come down to just a pure money issue and this board insisted that we just have to reduce the amount of money that we're paying the board rather than reduce the members, a better strategy would be to reduce the compensation. Very little of this will affect me. I don't plan on running again for president or for the board next time. I think I've done my time. And so none of this is going to affect me at all. I just don't think it's a good idea. I think it's fine the way that it is. Anyone else have an opinion on this? Trustee Green?
Every budget we've talked about salary. Not once have we talked about increases.
I think the staff salary, you mean?
No, ours.
Oh.
We have discussed that. So, I mean, for anybody to even think we've talked about increases, it's been talked the other way.
It's in the budget, yeah. But I don't
exactly. Know. But I think to do it for the reasons outlined, I completely agree with Randy. I think every one of them is erroneous. If we do it, it's not going to be because of this.
And that's why I dissented the first vote. I don't think that it's... Anything further? Trustee Dart.
Just for the record, doing some research, I do understand that our village president is quite underpaid compared to other village presidents.
And overworked and overfrustrated and underappreciated. And anything further? There is no motion on the floor. Would you suggest that we take no action? Then it's still on. I would rather entertain a motion to either up or down with regard to this.
I will make the motion that we maintain both the village trustee and village president salaries as is.
Is there a second? Trustee Genrich seconds. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 12, action regarding the sexual offender ordinance. This is carried over from the 19th of November. Is there a motion with regard to this item, Trustee Green?
Actually, this is just a point of order, too. With the way this action reads on the agenda, I would motion that we keep the sexual offender ordinance as is.
Okay, what's the point of order?
Well, because to me the issue is we've got a current situation, and dealing with the current situation, I don't see us changing the whole ordinance to deal with the current situation. And the way this item reads, it's dealing with the ordinance, which means opening it back up. It means public hearings. It means republishing an ordinance.
Yeah, I think we could probably deal with if the idea was to grant a variance for this particular situation, I think that would still be covered under...
It would.
Under this. It's related to the ordinance. I don't think it has to say that we're changing the ordinance. The agenda item says...
It's deferred from November.
Right, it's deferred from November. Right.
Wow, if I was the public looking at this agenda, that's not how I would take it.
I would, because it's a rather general item, sexual offender ordinance, and what we're proposing of doing is granting a variance.
Okay.
If you're talking about this particular issue, a variance to the sexual offender ordinance. It falls within the purview of the title of this agenda item.
For a specific person.
Right.
And you may want to notify.
We have neighbor notification issues. We have, I mean, that's why I just, as general as this is phrased. Yeah.
Okay.
I just have some heartburn with that.
All right. Do you have a motion?
Did not you? Anymore.
Okay.
Because we have some public input.
We do.
Okay. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Anyone want to propose a motion before we discuss amongst ourselves or open it up? Okay. Unless there are objections, we'll suspend the rules. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this? Yes, sir. Please come forward. State your name and address.
I was here 2 weeks ago. My name is Ron Munyon. I live at 337 Beau Prairie right down the street. And my landlord, Ray Solitaire, actually was going to be here tonight, and he asked me to come here. He wanted me to ask you guys about a provision in the rule or something. I myself don't have a problem with it. If I have to leave, I ask how much time do you guys grant me. But he said something in here about 1104, looks like one, residential density restrictions for designated sex offenders.
Mm-hmm.
It says down here, a little further down, I just want to read the whole thing. But this shall not apply to a designated sex offender who is... living with his immediate family, such as spouse, children, person's parent, etc. Just asking for a little clarification.
What does that mean? Does that fall under that provision, or do I got to move?
It wouldn't fall under that exception. I mean, what that means is if you're released from prison, for example, and your mom lives in a place.
Okay, well, he asked me to bring it up, so that's why I brought it up. All right, really the only other input I have is hopefully you'd consider giving me till the end of winter or even spring. Mm-hmm. You know, I will leave gracefully, you know, it's not an issue. I just wanted to bring that to your attention because he asked me to.
Sure.
So that's all I have.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Hearing none, we'll take up the rules. Do you want to entertain discussion before a motion? I'll start out. I really feel for the petitioners here, and this is not really what the density ordinance was, again, was meant for when we established it. It was meant for larger apartment complexes or hotels, motels, and it really wasn't meant for this. That having been said, I've taken to heart and mulled over for another couple of weeks some things that all of the board has said. Something that keeps resonating with me is it's not broken, and it seems to be working very well. And as you all know, we have an ordinance on our books that's much more liberal than our neighboring municipalities, especially to the north. And I would be a little bit leery of changing the ordinance and extending that even further. And I'm also extremely leery of getting in the business of granting variances and going down the path of having sort of a review board. So I'm not in favor of granting this. I am in favor of giving the petitioner plenty of time well into the spring and perhaps beyond to find a new residence, hopefully in the village of Alloway. It's not that I applaud the efforts that you've made to try to correct the mistake that you made some years ago. I think you're a contributing member of this community, and we're proud to have you here. We hope that you stay here somewhere in the village if your petition isn't granted. So it has nothing to do with the way that you've turned your life around and the way that you're running your family. It has to do with larger legal issues, and I just think we're in a good spot with what we've developed so far. Trustee Gass.
Well, I pretty much agree with everything you said. And the ordinance works well. You know, but what I think, you know, grants, you know, this is having, you know, some forbearance in terms of enforcement is, I mean, we heard his story at the last minute. He asked the right questions. And he asked the right questions of the right people, and nobody pointed him in the right direction, and I think he got some misleading or incomplete information or relied upon that. So, you know, I'd be more than in favor of forbearance, you know, in terms of enforcing the ordinance, which I think is a good ordinance, to September 1. You know, that would give him plenty of time to, you know,
through the summer.
Yeah, through the summer to make new living arrangements, because he asked the right questions, you know, and he just didn't get the right answers. We can't fault him for that.
Trustee Zeller, did you? No. Trustee Green?
I was going to say, I echo both your sentiments. I do not want to see us reopening our ordinance. I think we crafted a good ordinance, and it is working, and it's working well. I do not want to see us at all open a variance, because I think that goes down the path of Pandora's box. Also, doing we need some way people can look these things up easily. And I think, too, we had some good ideas last meeting, notification of Brown County sheriffs, notification of parole, notification of placement people. We should do all of that, and I'm all for waiting till at least spring so you can find alternate living arrangements, because I do feel for his situation. He did ask the right questions. So as far as, you know, doing anything imminently over the winter, I agree with waiting.
Any further comments? Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gantz?
Yeah, I would move that the ordinance remain in place but that the village forbear from issuing any citation for a violation of this particular ordinance. Mr. Munyon, is that your name, sir?
Yes.
Provided that he relocate from that unit on or before September 1 of 2014.
I'll second. Discussion? Trustee Green? Did you have anything, Trustee Gass?
No.
Trustee Green?
I would just say we should highly publicize, too, and I don't know if it's everybody else's feeling, but it's mine. We will not do this again just because this shouldn't have happened in the first place. We had an odd situation. There's no excuse for this happening again, because what I don't want to happen is all of a sudden somebody places two in the same dwelling again, and then they say, oh, but you granted a continuous settlement. No, this is a one and done, and it's a unique situation.
And, you know, I'm hearkening back to all the previous conversations we had since 6:30, and this is really frustrating because it's about process, and we screwed up on someone screwed up on a process. I don't know who it was. Well, we're not communicating well, and we had a problem with the church addition, and we had a problem with the church steeple because we're not getting the process down, and now we have a problem with where someone can actually live, and if this motion passes, he's going to have to move. So these are not inconsequential, and we have to get this process down so that it works well. And I realize no matter how well you say things, sometimes people don't hear them the right way, but we really have to work hard on making sure that everyone understands up front so we're not retroactively trying to fix things. Trustee Gaff.
Well, it seemed to me that a lot of the miscommunication or misunderstanding, you know, has to do with certain people interpreting the ordinance as not applying to duplexes, which it clearly does. But I think that this board has been very clear tonight that the proper interpretation of the ordinance is any structure which includes a duplex. So hopefully that message is consistent from this point going forward, and we won't have a problem again.
Well, we had this conversation in the context of legalese when we were reviewing ordinances, and I remember asking the question, why do we have to make them so difficult and complex and legalistic? And I remember Trustee Gass saying, well, that's just sort of the words that you have to use in order to make them enforceable. But this might be one of those cases where we're just phrasing things in a way that people don't really understand exactly what the rule is.
How do we not, though? It clearly states multifamily dwelling. That's the part I keep coming back to. So that's why I know we haven't been able to ascertain who the individuals are, but I just, if you read this, to me there is no ambiguity in this at all. So that's why I'd say
I understand, and you're right, but I could see how someone could interpret multi as being
more than two.
Otherwise, it's two. It's more than one.
I understand, but a duplex is two, dual is two, and it's sort of like the difference between a couple and a few, right? Mm-hmm. So I can understand. We're never going to eliminate the miscommunication, but I think we just have to work really hard in trying to figure out ways to communicate so that everyone's on board up front, so we're not going back. All right. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 13, action regarding the adoption of Resolution 2013-18 recognizing retirement of Dan Metzler. Metzner, sorry. Dan is not here tonight.
No.
Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green.
Moved to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Just hold on just a minute. I'll read the resolution. Be it resolved by the Village Board of the Village of Alloway, County of Brown, State of Wisconsin, that the Alloway Village Board wishes to thank Dan Metzner for his 33 years of dedicated service as a street department employee with the Village of Alloway, and honor Mr. Metzner with a resolution in recognition of his excellent service to the community. Passed and approved by the Village Board of the Village of Alloway this third day of December of 2013. So congratulations to Dan. 33 years at the same place is a long time. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item 15, action regarding the receiving and acceptance of Resolution 2013-17 adopted by Plan Commission and to schedule a public hearing for comprehensive plan update. Is there a motion with regard to this? And I'll give a little background, I think. Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. I guess Mr. Collins might have had a point in terms of preparation. This meeting was called for last Monday, I think it was, and only two of us showed up. So there was a lack of communication going on here. So we have to sort of start all over and plan another. There has to be another 30-day waiting period, right? And so we're looking at January 21st as the meeting for the public hearing.
What time?
6:30.
Our regular.
This
meeting.
It's our regular meeting. So we have a motion and a second, and the date was inherent in that motion and second. Is that correct,
mm-hmm.
Ms. Bain? Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item 16, action regarding the adoption of Ordinance 2013-17, repealing and recreating Section 1.10B of the General Provisions of the Village of Alloy Municipal Code relating to court costs. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Guest?
I'll move to adopt.
Is there a second? Trustee Gendrich? Discussion? Trustee Green?
These are the court costs dictated to us by the state, correct?
Yes, this was changed by Act 23.
Yeah, every year we go through this. This is just simply window dressing.
Wasn't the judge telling us about outside of this, that we were given permission to raise certain costs? This is it?
This is it,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought I understood that we could, but that we didn't have. But you're saying we have to.
No.
I don't think we have to either.
No, that's the maximum.
$10 was what it was.
All right.
That's the way you interpreted that either. Mm-hmm.
All right. I just want to be clear for the record that we're not being told that we have to do this. This is a choice of the board. So if anyone complains, it's on us. We're making the decision.
No, wait a minute. My question was.
The maximum will help too.
Right.
Yeah, but these are set by the state, correct, Tracy? At least that's always how it's
the
been
maximum
presented
is set
before.
By the state, but we don't. Right?
Yeah. The
correct. Because there's some of them that are ridiculously low. I don't want anybody to get the feeling we can do what we want with these, because that's not the case,
right.
Which drives me crazy.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think what the act did was raise the maximum from $28 to $38. So.
But if we chose to, we could say, no, we don't want to raise the maximum. We want to keep it at 28. And that's what I'm trying to say. The state isn't making us raise the maximum. They're saying you can.
No, but the state's saying all you can do is 38.
Right. Right. But this isn't an unfunded mandate, Lynn. This isn't an unfunded mandate that we have to. They're not telling us that we have to do something. They're telling us we can, but they're setting the limit at a certain amount. And
correct.
We're saying we're going to go up to that.
Lynn wants to make it $1 billion.
Well, because we don't get compliance with this. We cite people over and over
the way
and over.
The way the discussion started out, it made it seem like the state was making us raise our maximum.
No, that wasn't what I was getting at.
Okay,
this,
right.
My issue with this, in aggravation, is that the state does not let us set these fees to where we can get compliance. Because time and time again, we have the same people who just... So the state is not letting us do what we need to do to get compliance with our ordinances. And that's where my aggravation comes in. I wasn't trying to insinuate...
An unfunded mandate or
that
they're telling us what to do and we don't want... Right.
Correct.
The one mitigating... Factory. I mean, the nice thing about municipal citations is each time the sun comes up, it's a separate violation.
Every
subject
day.
Subject to a separate forfeiture assessment.
Right.
And Mark has used that. And, which is good, because the problem properties continue to be a problem.
We have had some concerns about, and I know this only relates to court costs, but we've had some concerns about most recently by Mr. Matuzic about issuing tickets for overnight parking and some of these smaller things that really, and it's been insinuated that we're trying to raise revenue for the village.
That's
and
not
I just want to make sure that everyone understands that this is not, this should not be interpreted as another piece of evidence that we're trying to make money off of.
We're trying to gain compliance,
right,
and it's not
right.
working in some cases.
And for the record, before tonight's meeting started, I gladly gave Debbie my second envelope with my birthday.
That's two this year already?
And
since November 1st?
I was wrong, and you get my money. That's the way it's supposed
and
to be.
Major penalty.
Just feeds into Trustee Green's thesis
about
compliance? We're not getting compliance.
And I don't think I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, you don't think you. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
We shouldn't do it again.
If the kids are home.
Action regarding adoption of Resolution 2013-19 approving the Village of Alloway bond schedule non-traffic violations. Schedule A. Here we go. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast?
I'll move to adopt.
Is there a second? Is there a second? Trustee Topher seconds. Discussion?
I have my same comment as last time.
And so do I. This is not about raising money.
No, it's about compliance.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 18, action regarding the approval of election inspectors. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Dart?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Green? I have a question. On what basis, I guess, would we not approve this list? Does anyone know? I mean, Trustee Zeller?
I don't have an answer, but I have another question.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
This is something that apparently I'm not prepared for this meeting because I don't ever remember receiving a list that has a party affiliation.
And normally I had them all on one list, but because it was the weekend and I didn't know if we'd have a meeting in 2 weeks, I put it on the agenda, but then those lists weren't due until the 30th, so we first got them on Monday. So I added them as a separate list. The first list is everybody that we currently have as an election inspector, and most of these on this list from the Democratic and Republican Party are also on our list. The only addition is Calvin Lead, but we just have to nominate them as presented. Right.
And I think Trustee Zeller's question was about the party affiliation,
yeah,
which is a new development, isn't it?
No.
That's specified?
Every 2 years they can submit a list for us to use.
They're not required to, but
they can
submit a list. And these folks, some of whom are on the rolling list, are
All the Democrats are on our current list as unaffiliated, but now they're going to be listed as Democratic Party. We have to have so many at each polling place, so many Democrats, so many Republicans, depending on who was voted in at the last election.
Okay, I didn't realize that. That was where I was headed, so thank you.
You're welcome.
But I have a question to answer for Steve.
That the only basis on which we would deny it, if there was an imbalance or something?
No, there is an imbalance. We just have to work with it. But right. Unless you knew
I don't want to belabor it, although I'm known for belaboring things, but I don't want to. But I'm making it uncomfortable. I don't know what I'm voting on.
It's another window dressing.
Yeah, if I ever. Right. I mean, I know what I'm voting on, I just don't know why I'm doing it. There's no basis for me to deny
them.
Because the state says
what
we
would
have
that be?
To.
That they're a felon or.
Okay, well, that's. All right.
However.
That's an
how would we know that?
Debbie's already vetted these people, and actually a lot of them have
I know
done this
person
for a long time.
I know this person, and he owes me money, so we're not paying
right.
it.
So it's
like approving floodplains.
Inspectors that do have a party affiliation, they don't have any different duties. They have the same role that they're assigned to.
Yes, it's just that the Democratic Party has a lot of people on their list, And so at one polling place, if we have seven of them on this list that work at the same polling place, they're going to either have to move to a different location and or possibly not work
election. I see. Okay.
That makes sense. Any further discussion?
We could talk about certified survey maps. We might have to approve those.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And a lighter note. Action regarding Langley School parking request for party garage. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Genrich. Is there a second? Trustee Dart. Discussion? Any problems with this?
On Penwood or?
No, not a problem.
What, again, trying to belabor it, I guess. What's our we have a policy about if something is happening on an annual basis that they don't have to come for, is that just for park stuff? Or I know that.
Yeah, it's more for events, but for the parking end of it, that would have to come for approval because it's the parking and asking.
Oh, the parking, okay.
Yes, so that would have to come each year.
Okay.
If it was just the party, they're just having, you know, have party grads going on, same hours, same time, then it wouldn't have to come, but because they're asking for the parking end of it, they would have to come back.
You've been watching too much Colbert Report, because the word for the day is belabor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We'll take items 20A through C as one, unless we want to string it out. Trustee Kopisch, would you like to take them separately?
Whatever your pleasure is, you're running the meeting.
Is there a motion with regard to items 20A through C?
I think we should take them together because I don't want to belabor them any longer than we have. Okay.
Trustee Genrich, second. Trustee Green. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Discussion regarding the distribution of literature on doorsteps, doorknobs. These people are not distributing doorknobs or distributing literature on doorknobs.
Right.
Super clear. What'd you find out, Mark?
Well, doing the research, found out there's only actually about five people that complained in about 10 years. It's kind of large group that still get attention, plus I've run across these guys delivering them. Checking for most of this, this distributing of handbills and things falling to the First Amendment rights, so basically we have nothing we can actually, we can't stop them. We could write a board that's saying they can't do it under litter law. The only one I found that was any good was Miami. They had one, but still lawyers are still saying it's all First Amendment rights for them to go up there and put advertising on the door. The only thing they're trying to do is write a citizen can put no soliciting, no handbills or something on their property. That would stop them from doing that. Or have your neighbors come pick it up if they're gone. So the one complaint was, you know, we're on vacation. It's like leaving a newspaper out for three or four newspapers piling up. Somebody, oh, they're not there around their house. Need to ask the neighbor to make them take it off there. The only thing I would find that we could do is, just like the peddler solicitor law, have them come in, get a permit so that we know they're out there. Actually, after I sent this out the other day, when my ex-cadets came in and said that one of these people wanted to hire him to deliver stuff, and he said, well, you need to go get a permit. They said, just do it until you get caught, and then we'll just act ignorant. So I said, he came.
Compliance issue, the trustee agrees.
Oh, man.
So, you know, luckily, cadets, I said, you're not working. He said, no. Okay.
Well, and the no soliciting stickers, they don't work either. They still are leaving them. Would a no trespassing sign work any better?
Actually, no, not that. No, because you still have to. The other part of the law is like public works on property, police officer coming on property, waterman coming on property.
That's very different than a private whatever.
Beware of chicken sign.
Beware of chicken. I love it.
You're giving up.
Range.
It's your expectation of allowing people on your property for daily activities, and that's considered daily activity. Up under the cancer law, where a person can stand out in the street hand out flyers. They can also come up on your property. It's, this is old, old laws back in the 1700s where you're allowed to come up. That's just for political reasons, but then it went over to advertisement. But you're allowed to come up on somebody's property and do this. Said some municipalities across the United States, I checked a lot of them, they did write laws. Some got sued, and majority of them lost, and they got a lot of money to the companies handing out these advertisements. I suggest we want to make a big deal, just have them come in, fill out a permit, so we know they're out there. And then if they do find some litter, we might be able to get them under the litter law if I find them, which I picked up three floating around on the grounds. But that I could say somebody could walk at the door and take it off and throw it on the ground. You know, can't really blame the advertiser if he's making sure they're secure on the door. But one thing we do is have them come in and go on a permit application, could charge them, just make sure that we know they're out there. They come in, let us know they will be out there, so somebody calls in and says, yes, we know they're there. That's not one thing that I can find we can do.
Why would they do that? If they don't have to.
Why would they?
Why would they come and get a permit if they don't have to?
We can write an ordinance where they could come in to let us know they're out there.
That or we can require them to get a permit to do this.
That okay. I found, we require them to let us know that they're going to be in our municipality.
But we can't charge them for it.
What I'm looking at, though, we can't really charge them for it. Unless we're going to do a background check on them, we can charge them for the background check.
That would make sense to me if they're on people's property. It also makes sense to me to keep a do not call list,
well,
we're not checking for phones.
We're checking the company. The company can hire anybody, but we can check, we do a background on the company to make sure, like any other family or solicitor, that they're a valid entity. They're mm-hmm. not just some fly by night people coming in there. So that's the only thing with that, but they can hire whoever they want to. To hand them out, so we're not doing individual backgrounds, we're just doing the company.
Still, knowing the company's ballot is reasonable.
Right. Mark, Trustee Green alluded to something. We have no call list, so we can prevent people from calling our houses, but we can't prevent them from walking up to our doors. Is that...
From what I understand, from the advertisers, most of them will, if you call them and ask them not to do it, they try to put a list out of other advertisers, do not put them on these houses. But the guy said that the main problem was, you know, that falls through like anything else, communication. You know, you don't get it out to every
Yeah, the no call list, though, if they do it, there are some
penalties,
fines that can be levied against them to make them conform. And so they can't use the excuse, well, our spreadsheet got it.
I didn't check that part as far as fines for that. Because, again, it's not illegal for them to actually do it.
Well, it's not illegal for someone to call your house either, unless you're on the no-call list. Then there's some consequences of it. So, but there's nothing. There's no parallel for what we're talking about to the no-call list.
Right.
Okay.
They do it as a courtesy, and I think
right.
they would do it as a courtesy, but it falls in cracks sometimes with the persons they hire to go out there.
Right.
I think when I read the memo. That you can conceivably cite them for trespass if somebody leaves a handbill on the door. There's a sign that says no solicitation. You know, maybe we can put that into the permit. You know, I mean, I like that in the permit. At least we know who's in the village. We know who to contact if there's problems. So I think that's a good concept. And we could require them to get a permit, and on the permit we could indicate that look, if you arrive at a residence and it is clearly posted to be no solicitation, any materials left there will be considered trespass. Right.
So we could do this, and I could send it through our legal and see what they say about it.
Mm-hmm. And we can't vote on it, but that, I think we need to do something.
It's only a discussion in the direction we're going to go in.
Well, nice job on the history.
Yes.
It lays out.
Very interesting.
He started with Samuel Adams standing on a soapbox in Boston Commons
I learned from Debbie a few weeks ago that if you ask a question of Debbie, she usually has a file on it, and you get it usually within 48 hours of your request.
Really?
I get it.
The world's best reference library when it comes to the history of Alloy. Anything further? Mark, I think the consensus of the board, although we don't vote, is that we'd like you to proceed and pursue some options for making sure that we can get compliance, and even though it's only a handful of residents.
I think you'll find more that as we institute this, we'll take advantage of it because they just don't bother to complain because they're thinking they can't do anything.
Is there a motion to adjourn? Trustee Genrich, second. Trustee Dart, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.